It gives me great pleasure to introduce Holly P. from Cyprus, our speaker this evening.
Polly, and I'm an alcoholic. I mean, that's power, man. By God's grace, a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I haven't had a drink since April the 11th of 1977, and for that, I am truly grateful. And so is my husband, my kids, my mother, and because thanks to this program, life is really good tonight. I don't know how you are tonight, but I'm just about as blessed as I can be. Alan took me to dinner, and I got here, and Frank Honeycutt was here, so I don't know how you feel, but I was sitting between two of the finest men in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I just feel really blessed. So I just, you know, it's like, just stick around. Those of you who are new, and you just come to Alcoholics Anonymous, and you just could love so much, you can just barely stand it. It's fantastic. My home group is Monday Night Seal Beach Speakers Meeting, and if you've never been there, I invite you there. It's one of those meetings in Alcoholics Anonymous that I like to call pockets of enthusiasm. There's a guy in Omaha that says, there's AA as pockets of enthusiasm, and that's the way I feel about Monday night, because one of the things I love about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is that it's fun. And I was listening to Carol R. talked at Monday night Seal Beach last night, and she gave one of the finest talks I've heard in Alcoholics Anonymous. And she looked at the person who brought her into the program, and she says, Connie, I can't stay if it's not fun. And the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, if you're new, is fun. I have had so much fun in this program that I have had more joy in my life in the almost 18 years I've been sober than the 36 years prior. So I'm truly grateful to be here tonight. When I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't have a God that even resembles the God I have tonight. I am, besides being a recovering alcoholic and drug addict, I am a recovering Southern Baptist. And when I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I had a lot of old ideas about God. Now, I do not like to use the podiums of Alcoholics Anonymous to bash church, bash other 12-step programs, to bash anything. I learned in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that I stand behind a podium. I tell the truth the best I can, and sometimes that's okay and sometimes it's not, because even with 18 years of sobriety, I've been known to tell a lie a couple of times a day. And and I've learned to respect this podium. This is where the message in Alcoholics Anonymous is carried, so I'm not here to bash churches. I'm just going to tell you my story. Because what I learned from a man named Clancy, Clancy talks about alcoholism being a disease of perception. And I love his take, alcoholism, a disease of perception. And Frank was talking about going to Hawaii. And I remember a few years ago I got invited to speak at a camp out. And there was a guy named Ron there, and he taped. And he asked me if I'd ever heard that tape. And I said no. And I got that tape, and I absolutely swear by that tape today, that alcoholism is a disease of perception. Because I just never heard things the way they really were, and I never saw things the way they really were. My mother, I can still hear her saying, Polly, whatever gave you that idea? Nobody said that to you. And I just would hear and see these things that weren't there. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous calls it delusion. And I'm certain that I have always lived in delusion. So when I talk about this Baptist church, I want you to know that my mother still goes to that church, and she does fine. It did not have the same effect on her as it had on me. But the things that I heard there were, these preachers would get up behind the podium, and they'd slam their fist on the podium, and their faces would get red, and their veins would stick out, and they'd lean out into the congregation, and they'd say things like, if you've thought it, you've done it. Now, I don't know about any of you, but I was an alcoholic in the making, and I thought a lot. And I started to take on this attitude of what's the use? There's no way I'm going to be good enough for God. There's no way I'll ever, ever be good enough. And I had this attitude of there's no way I'm going to be enough. I am just not enough. And God's not going to love anybody like me. Because you see, I was an alcoholic in the making, and I kept thinking all the time. And I had these thoughts, and I just knew that God was going to punish me. And that's the attitude that I brought into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And in Alcoholics Anonymous, she gave me the big book. And in the big book, it tells me where God is. It says that God is deep within. And it tells me how to find God. And it says to search fearlessly. And tonight, God, as I understand him, expresses himself to me through the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, I don't know about any of you, but God has never sent me a fax. So what I need to do is I need to suit up and show up for meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous because I need you to keep me in touch with reality. Because without you, I do not have a clue what reality is. My perception of reality is distorted. I need to be in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I need to follow direction. And I'm here to tell you, in almost 18 years of sobriety, I need to follow direction more today than I ever needed to. But so I'm here to tell you, I got a lot to lose today. A lot to lose. A way more to lose than when I came in here. My life is valuable. And when I got here, I did not feel like my life was valuable. I have a higher power who's got a dynamite sense of humor, and I'd like to share that with you. My name is Polly. It's not Pauline or Paula, it's Polly. And if you're a little girl and your name is Polly, you're going to be teased a lot. And it's going to be things like Polly wants a cracker and Polly Wally Doodle all the day. And I don't know about any of you guys, but I'm sensitive. And I don't like to be teased and I don't like to be laughed at. But what I've learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is there's no negatives in God's world. It's only my perception that's negative. Everything has a positive result. And tonight, I love having the name Polly. Because you see, I can come into rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous where there's a lot of people like there is tonight. And when somebody says Polly, I'm pretty sure they're talking to me. There's just not very many Pollys in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know that I was an alcoholic, but I knew that I was a drunk and I knew that I was a lush. And I used to drive down the freeways in Dallas, Texas, and I used to pray to God to have heart disease or cancer or something because I knew that I was dying and I just wanted to die of something respectable. And today I know that the disease of alcoholism is my greatest gift because if I didn't have the disease of alcoholism, I wouldn't qualify for the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And everything I am or hope to be, I owe to the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. 14 years ago, I married Dave. Dave's last name is Pistol. My name is now Polly Pistol. Now, I will assure you, you cannot walk around on planet Earth with a name like Polly Pistol and not learn to lighten up. So, God has a great sense of humor. And you know, we've got in our Rule 62, we have in our book, in our literature, we have this rule around here called Rule 62, just don't take yourself so damn seriously. And that is what has helped me, is to walk around with this silly name has really helped me just not to take myself so seriously. I am also living, breathing proof that you can come to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and not come from alcoholic parents. I do not come from the disease of alcoholism. Now, I've heard in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, take an alcoholic's family tree, give it a shake, and an alcoholic will fall out. Now, I believe that that alcoholic might be my mother's father, but I can assure you that my recollection of his drinking was absolutely nothing like my drinking. But at any rate, what I learned when I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous was to begin to identify with the feelings. Because, see, the things that I believe that make us different is how we drank. But how we felt about our drinking are the things that make us alike. And I began to listen to you talk about your alcoholic moms and your alcoholic dads, and I felt the same way you did. Because, you see, my dad was a man who was full of anger. And he used to have fits of rage, just like a periodic alcoholic. And you never, ever knew when he was going to have one of these fits of rage. And when he did, furniture would fly, and he'd curse and yell, and he'd knock my mom around. But I used to look at my dad and think, What have I done? Had I just been better or done better, then Daddy wouldn't have been so angry. And I'd do the same thing that you did with your alcoholic dad. I'd look at my dad and I'd say, there's no way I'll ever be like you. And the irony of it was, I became just like him. And I'd look at my mom and I'd say, you're such a wimp. Why don't you stand up for yourself? How can you let him treat you that way? And I'd look at her and I'd swear there's no way I'd ever be like her. And I truly believe that alcoholism is totally accentuate the negative, eliminate the positive. Because what happened was, is what I recollect and what I remember coming into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is the worst of both my parents. It wasn't until I got into the inventory steps and began to take an honest look at my life did I see how much I was loved and how my parents adored me. I was an only child, and my parents absolutely adored me. But I did not know it until I came to these rooms and worked these steps. I would have sworn to you that nobody loved me and nobody cared. And my perception of reality is distorted because, you know, the only person that didn't love me when I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous was me. I'm the only one who's never been on my side. The rest of the world has been there, has been supportive. It's only me who has never been on my side. And I'm so grateful to this program because I believe this program has given me and many people like me the opportunity to take an honest look at myself. And for that, I'm so grateful. Because, you see, I was one of these people that was always trapped in my victim. I don't know if you know any victims or if you are a victim. I was a victim of everything. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that most of our problems are of our own making. And you know what? That's the good news. Because if my problems are of anybody else's making, I'm screwed. Because you see, if my problems are of other people, places, and things, then you have to change for me to get better. And that sometimes doesn't happen. And I'm so grateful today that I had to work a fourth step, and in that magic fourth column, I had to see what my part was in it. And it wasn't until I was willing to take responsibility for my own actions that I could begin to heal from the disease of alcoholism. I believe that this disease is a disease that I must at all times be responsible and accountable for. I must be responsible and accountable for my actions, past and present. And newcomer, I don't want to run you out of this room, but I want to give you a flash. You don't have to change much, darling, just everything. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous is real clear. It says the results are nil unless I get rid of all my old ideas. My first AA sponsor, Frank, said to me, he says, and Polly, what part of the word all don't you understand? All my old ideas. And that's so neat because little by little, they just fall away. My perception of reality is distorted. You see, I thought my mother was this wimpy lady. My father died when he was 60 years old, and my mother was left, and he didn't leave her with a lot of money because he was a very young man when he died. And my mother is 77 years old today, and she works full time. You see, she's self-supporting through her own contribution. And you know, I just don't believe that wimps do that. My mother is a woman for me to look up to. She is a woman that has showed me how to be responsible and accountable. And she always showed me that. I believe what the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, that I am suffering from a spiritual malady. I believe that the disease of alcoholism is a spiritual disease. I believe the disease of alcoholism is a disease of the soul. When I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I would have sworn to you that I was not loved. My parents loved me and adored me. But you see, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, when I am suffering from a spiritual malady, that nothing is enough. You cannot love me enough, you cannot do enough, and you cannot give me enough. There is absolutely not enough to fill the hole of spiritual illness. I am so grateful today to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous because our book says we are 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. Because of a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I have recovered from a state of hopeless state of mind and body. And for that, I'm so grateful. I'm not here to say, those of you who are new or nearly new, that everything is great in my life, because life is life. And what's really neat about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is today I'm able to suit up and show up for life. I couldn't do that prior to coming to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I could not suit up and show up for life. I did not want to be responsible for my life, and I definitely did not want to be accountable. I wanted you to take care of me. In fact, in Texas, we call this, when you pout, we call it puffing up. You know how you just kind of puff up? And then it's your responsibility to find out what's wrong with me. And then it's your responsibility to make me happy. And if you don't, you don't love me. I love what Clancy says. He says, we are people who have to be treated special just to feel average. And if you don't treat us special, then we feel rejected. I'm so grateful today that these things have been told to me. At 18 years old, I married an Air Force officer. And I just knew that I had found my knight in shining armor, and we were going to sail off into the sunset and live happily ever after. Well, I married a SAC pilot, and this man was going to be gone, and he was going to be gone for years at a time. And I was going to have to learn to be responsible for myself, and I did not know how to do that. At 18 years old, I took a drink of alcohol. It was no big deal. I don't remember the first drink of alcohol I took. It was just there, and I took it. Now, that's an entirely different story than my husband tells. My husband says he took a drink of alcohol, and he chased that feeling until the days he entered the room of Alcoholics Anonymous. Alcohol for me was cunning, baffling, and powerful. And there's a sign in the Alano Club in Salt Lake City, Utah, that describes my disease of alcoholism. And that sign says, the chains of alcoholism were too soft to be felt until they were too strong to be broken. I didn't know there was anything wrong until I tried to quit. And one day I tried to quit, and I couldn't. I absolutely could not quit. Now, I will assure you that it is not acceptable behavior in the military for an officer's wife to be drunk and disorderly. That was totally unacceptable behavior. So what I learned to do was do some controlled drinking. I listened to Carol last night talking about her controlled drinking, and I can definitely identify with that. I don't know if any of you had to do any controlled drinking. But if I went to a cocktail party, I began to know that there was something wrong with my drinking. And I want you to know that I never, ever met an alcoholic until I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I did not know an alcoholic. And until just a few years ago, I said all the people that we hung around with, my ex-husband and I, in the Air Force, that none of those people were in Alcoholics Anonymous, and furthermore, none of them needed to be. And I now have a friend that's been in the program for 5 years. But I can assure you, when I was getting ready to come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, Lou didn't drink anything like I drank. So he took a little while longer. But I didn't even know what an alcoholic was. So I didn't know what I had seen movies like The Days of Wine and Roses and I'll Cry Tomorrow, and that didn't mean anything to me. I mean, they weren't living the kind of life I was living. I had absolutely no identification with those movies. First of all, I thought, you know, my perception of Alcoholics Anonymous and alcoholics were Skid Row bums. And those movies pretty much showed that type of an alcoholic. It certainly wasn't a little Air Force officer's wife laying on her sofa watching soap operas. That just wasn't the kind of alcoholic I saw in these movies. In 1962, we're stationed in a place called Loring Air Force Base, Maine. And I was just finding out that it's very cold in Maine right now. And when I was living there, sometimes it would be as much as 50 below zero. And I had these two little kids, and I had not a clue how to be a parent. No tools to be a parent. And here I was, by and large, a single parent and did not know how to do that. And these two little boys, I couldn't send them out to play, and they were driving me crazy. I was having a nervous breakdown every 20 minutes. So I went to an Air Force doctor, and they said, take these. And from 1962 until 1977, when I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I drank alcohol, and I took Librium and Valium and Seconal and Nemutol. And if you take those kind of drugs and you drink alcohol, I will assure you, you are not an active alcoholic. I call myself a couch potato alcoholic because I did my dying on my living room sofa. I just lay there and watch soap operas and listen to Joan Baez sing the blues. I believe in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous where it talks about the family afterwards. I believe that the disease of alcoholism is a family disease. And I believe that anybody who lives with a practicing alcoholic is affected by the disease of alcoholism. My children have been traumatized by a disease called alcoholism. Now, my son is recovering in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've had the opportunity to listen to him speak from these podiums. And my story sounds very different from James, because James talks about a little boy, and his mother is passed out on the sofa, but he doesn't know that she's passed out. And this little boy walks back and forth in front of that sofa, and he's absolutely gripped with terror, because he's certain that his mother is dead and his father is gone. And that's the disease of alcoholism. It absolutely traumatizes our children. I'd like to tell you a few things that brought me to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, because I don't talk much about a drunkalogue because I slept through it, and so would you. And I don't have any racy stories to tell with my drinking. I did all my affairs sober in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. So my racy stories prior to drinking are just not there. And I told an automobile in Irving, Texas, and I called the police because I'm a blackout drinker, and I told them that my car was stolen. And here comes the police, and they take me to the Irving police station. And I got to see that look in the non-alcoholic's eyes who just don't understand why we do the things we do. And this policeman looked at my husband with so much disgust, and he said, why don't you take her home and sober her up? And on the way home, my husband said, Polly, there's a treatment center, and it's not far from my house, and I wish you would go. And that night, I entered treatment for the first time. And I will assure you, this was no fancy jitter joint. This was a county detox. And this is the part, especially when Frank's here, that's always really special, because I met Frank Honeycutt at Frank Fitzpatrick's house in Fort Worth, Texas. But I was very, very newly sober because Frank and my AA sponsor, Frank, were very good friends because Frank got sober here at the Naval Hospital. And he was the director of that treatment center. And for some reason, he just took a liking to me and really tried to help me. But while I was in that treatment center, I did not believe I had a disease called alcoholism. You see, the arrogance of the alcoholic, I believed that people like me just didn't become alcoholic. And Dr. Tebolt says that there are two characteristics found in every alcoholic, defiant individuality and grandiosity. And my husband Dave says only an alcoholic can lay in the gutter feeling superior to those looking down on him. And here I was, people like me don't become alcoholic. And while I was in this treatment center, I had a jitterhouse romance, you know, one of those when sick falls in love with sick and you walk off into happy destiny. Well, we walked off into happy destiny for 58 days. And I was brought back into that treatment center more dead than alive. I had been beaten up and numerous of sundry things. And Frank Fitzpatrick 12-stepped me out of that motel and brought me back into that treatment center. And I had been very badly beaten up. And I knew that I could not stay sober. I had reached that place in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that talks about pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization, because I knew that there was no way I could stay sober. And you see, I have just defined the disease of alcoholism because I knew that I could not live inside my own skin without alcohol. There was no way I could face myself without alcohol. The first time I heard Clancy's talk about the disease of alcoholism on a tape, I nearly wrecked my car when he said, "The disease of alcoholism has nothing to do with alcohol. If alcohol were the problem, then I would not need to suit up and show up for meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have been physically sober for almost 18 years. Alcohol is not my problem. The disease of alcoholism is my problem. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says the disease rests in the mind. I need to treat the disease of alcoholism on a daily basis. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says I get a daily reprieve contingent on my spiritual condition for that day." Now, I have heard people say, I don't know where this kind of stuff comes from, but they'll say things like, "You go to a lot of AA meetings so you can put insurance policies in the bank. So when you need that sobriety, you'll have it." Now, I don't know where that comes from. I have not a clue where that comes from, because my big book reads that I get a daily reprieve contingent on my spiritual condition for that day. And I was told by those old Texas rednecks when I got sober that you cannot live today's recovery on yesterday's sobriety. You have got to live today's sobriety on today's recovery. So what is necessary for me is to get up tomorrow morning and do the same thing I did this morning. Because it's very necessary that I make sure that I ask God to help me through each day. And if you're having trouble with a higher power, I'm going to share Earl. If you ever get a chance to hear Earl, he's great. Earl said he couldn't believe in God, and his AA sponsor says, "Well, let me tell you, see if you can do this. Just wake up in the morning and say, 'Ready,' and go to bed at night and say, 'Done.' And God hears." That's okay. He hears. And I was told to ask for help and to thank him at night. And for that, I'm truly grateful. At any rate, Frank 12-stepped me, and he brought me back into this treatment center. And I knew that I couldn't stay sober. There was no way that I was going to be able to live inside my own skin sober. Because, you see, I couldn't live with the kind of mother I'd become and the kind of wife I'd become and the kind of daughter I'd become. And I've heard in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that men hate what they've done and women hate what they have become. And I hated what I had become. And I knew that there was no way I could live sober. And I left that treatment center and I got a bottle of scotch and I got a bottle of Valium and I checked into a motel. I don't believe that there's anybody in this room that doesn't have an Eskimo in your life. And an Eskimo is someone who leads us to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had such a lady in my life. And this lady said that day that something came over her. And today I know what that something was. That was God working in my life through her. And she drove around until she found my car parked outside this motel. And she pushed the door open. I hadn't shut it all the way. And she found me laying there. And on April the 8th of 1977, I was pronounced dead on arrival in a hospital in Bedford, Texas. Needless to say, that didn't take, because I'm standing here tonight. But I have to tell you about the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Please turn it over.
And on April the 8th of 1977, I was pronounced dead on arrival in a hospital in Bedford, Texas. Needless to say, that didn't take, because I'm standing here tonight. But I have to tell you about the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I could not find God, or I don't think God is lost. Let's just say I didn't have any feelings of God for over 5 years in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was not in touch with God's grace, and I believe that everybody who walks through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous is given God's grace. The unfortunate thing is most of us give it back. And grace, if you look it up in Webster's Dictionary, is a gift unearned. I have done nothing to earn this gift. This is a free gift that has been given to me. And I love in our daily reflections, one of the sayings in there, someone, one of our members wrote, "Sobriety is God's gift to me. What I do with my sobriety is my gift back to God." I love that. Because I could 12-step and be on the phone, and Alan and I were talking about this tonight, every single minute of every single day, and I still would not be able to repay Alcoholics Anonymous for what it's done for me. It is a privilege to come to Arbor Road and share. It is a privilege to be able to have the opportunity to share in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. That is it's an absolute privilege to be able to do that. At any rate, I couldn't find God. And I had this secret, and I just knew that somebody was going to find it out. And what happened was, is I began to work the steps in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous at 5 years of sobriety, exactly as they're laid out in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because on April the 11th of 1977, I entered a hospital in Dallas, Texas. And it was one of those five-step hospitals where you take the first five steps. And the fourth step was one of those inventories, one of those Hazleton inventories, like I was born. And what happened was, is when Dave and I moved to Grand Rapids, Michigan, I shared this secret with this lady I asked to be my sponsor. And you see, nobody had known that I didn't do the steps exactly as they were in the big book, because I said I did. I thought I had. And she asked me about my steps, and she says, Polly, you should have feelings of God. If you've done the steps, then the steps, you know, the 12th step is having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. And I said, I just don't have these feelings that people are talking about. And so what she did is she said, tell me how you've worked the steps. And when we got to the fourth step, I told her about this inventory, and she says, Polly, that makes a great novel, but it does nothing for inventory. Because you see, what happened was, is I hadn't done the steps as they were laid out, and I missed the magic fourth column. So what has happened is I had not become responsible and accountable for my actions. And until I became responsible and accountable for my actions, I could not be set free. Now, what I've learned in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is to know the truth, and the truth will set you free. It's apt to piss you off first, but it will set you free. So I highly encourage you to get into the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous and set yourself free, because it is absolutely so, it is the best feeling, and there's no way to tell a person about a spiritual awakening. And if you take the necessary action, and taking the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous is taking the necessary action to have a spiritual awakening. I got into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was told to get active into this program. And that's what I began to do. I began to suit up and show up for meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I got active in this program. And I was told if I had 30 minutes more sobriety, then I was to share that 30 minutes. And what happened was, it was not necessary that I would save somebody from the disease of alcoholism. What was necessary is that I got to stay sober myself. And by sharing one alcoholic to another has been the biggest miracle in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had a wonderful dinner with Alan tonight, and we sat down, and I had the privilege of watching Alan come into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you don't think that's a gift, just be there. Just suit up and show up and watch somebody walk into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and stay sober. And 8 years later, you're sitting down and you're having dinner. That's the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's not a bigger miracle in the world than me to sit down in my living room or to drive in my car with another woman and share woman to woman, alcoholic to alcoholic, in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's the magic of this program. That is the magic of Alcoholics Anonymous, one alcoholic sharing with another. And I got busy in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think that it is absolutely imperative that we do all three legacies in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I look at our three legacies like a three-legged stool. You know, a three-legged stool can hold a lot of weight, but if you remove one leg, it falls over. So it is absolutely necessary that I do the recovery, which is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. It is absolutely imperative that I suit up and show up for meetings and do the unity, which is what we're doing tonight. And it is imperative that I be of service, which is what I'm being tonight. It is imperative that I suit up and show up and be willing to help another alcoholic no matter what. And I am so grateful that those things were told to me. And I love this program. I wish that people who don't have the enthusiasm for Alcoholics Anonymous, that I could give it to them. I sponsor a lot of women who just can't seem to get the enthusiasm. I don't know what it takes to have that. I'm just grateful that I have it. I just know that for me, I love to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I love to work with alcoholics. In fact, if I had my choice, I don't even want a job. I wish I could just work with alcoholics, but so far that has not been what I've been able to do. Somehow or another, you know, society says I have to be responsible and I have to pay the rent and buy the groceries and all of this other stuff that you taught me to be responsible for in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had a lot of gifts here and I want to share those gifts with you. When I was 3 years sober, I married another member of this fellowship. And Dave is my greatest gift in this program. And there's a lot of people in this room who know Dave. And he's a very kind and loving man. And he and I are very, very different. I'm one of these kind of buzzsaws in Alcoholics Anonymous. And Dave is a very quiet, easygoing, steady guy. And Dave is one of these guys that likes to throw a 40-pound pack on his back and walk around on top of mountains. And that's where he feels close to his God. And I'm really grateful that he likes to do that. And when Dave and I got married, Frank told us, he said, Polly, you and Dave will always have a wonderful marriage if you'll just always remember to treat Dave like a newcomer. And how do we treat newcomers? With love, patience, and tolerance. And Dave and I have grown up in this program together. We didn't, you know, neither one of us knew how to have a relationship. We both knew how to take a hostage, but neither one of us knew how to have a relationship. And we got to watch people before Red died. My AA sponsor had 30 years of marriage, and I was grateful for that. Frank is Dave's AA sponsor, and Frank has 50 years of marriage. And there was a couple in Omaha that Dave and I got close to, and they have over 30 years of marriage. And what we were told to do is that if you pick up the traditions and you work them in your relationship, there's no way to ever have a problem with relationships, either with spouses, significant others, I think is the new term, any kind of relationship. If we work the 12 traditions, there is no reason to have a problem with relationships. And isn't that ironic that every time we read in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, we read the traditions. And the traditions say, the traditions are to the group as the steps are to the individual. And Dave and I are a group. A lot of people stand up behind podiums of Alcoholics Anonymous and give these rags to riches story. Well, I sort of have a riches to rags story. I love to hear Willie talk of last night. One of our friends celebrated 11 years of sobriety last night, and he talked about all the things he came to Alcoholics Anonymous with, and he doesn't have any of those things today, but he's left with what's of really of value. And Dave and I have had some opportunities to grow in the last few years. And my husband is a very highly educated computer scientist. And when all of the high-tech jobs were starting to go, especially middle management and men over 40, he got caught in that middle management, whatever, male middle management, the 3 M's, I think they're calling it. And he got laid off from his job. And, you know, we didn't think too much about that. I mean, Dave hadn't looked for a job in a very long time, but, God, it couldn't be that tough. And what we found out was that nobody wanted to hire a 57-year-old computer scientist. And life got a little tough. And it looked like we were going to lose our house. And sure enough, we did. And we got invited to leave. And so all here come all the people in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and helped us move, and Frank moved the refrigerator, and we were just, it was wonderful. And when I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, this guy Sandy Beach in Washington, D.C., I can remember Sandy saying, our receivers are broken. We don't know how to receive. And what I've learned in the past 2 years is how to receive. My receiver was still broken because, you see, I was always in the position of doing the giving, And what I found out was, is as long as you're in the position of doing the giving, you're always in control. But when you have to be the receiver is when you become vulnerable. And now I found out what the big problem was about losing that house. The big problem was ego. Because, you see, I was really ashamed that that happened. I mean, here Dave and I were, you know, 16 and 17 years sober. That's not supposed to happen to people who've been that sober. I don't know what I thought supposed to happen, but I certainly didn't. That happens to newcomers, not people who've been in the program a while. But what I learned was, is that I was embarrassed and I was ashamed. And the only thing that really Dave and I really lost, or certainly me, I don't think Dave was having the problem. The only thing that I lost through that whole experience was a lot of ego. That's all. Because you see, now I have the experience. And when somebody new comes in and they come walking through the doors whining, oh my God, I'm going to lose my house, I can say, sit down, been there, done that. You will live through it. And you don't have to drink and you don't have to die. And I'm really grateful today for the experience. And I'm here to tell you, God's got a great sense of humor. Because Dave and I now have moved to Cyprus, and we have twice the house for half the money. So I continue to be blessed. When I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I realized that my two sons were traumatized by the disease of alcoholism. I would come into meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and those of you, I can't stress this enough, and I know this is a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, but if your heart is breaking from a family member, or maybe you have somebody out there, even if you're alcoholic, who's dying from the disease of alcoholism, I highly encourage you to go to Al-Anon. When I came to these rooms, I realized that my 14-year-old son was a full-blown drug addict. And I walked around these rooms and I would go, it's not fair. How can this be happening to me? And I was told to suit up and show up for meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous because I may be the only big book James ever reads. I'm here to tell you tonight that I think sobriety is a responsibility. It is absolutely necessary that I be responsible and accountable for my sobriety. Because you see, this is a program of attraction, and I don't know who's watching. I don't know who's watching me walk every day. You see, I work in a place where people don't know I'm an alcoholic. That is, and if they knew, they really wouldn't care. That's not, they're not into the disease of alcoholism. They're into insurance, and that's what they want to do. And it's my responsibility to behave like a recovering alcoholic. And that is to be an example of this program. That 12 step says that I practice these principles in all my affairs. You know, I've got a little round circle on my car with a triangle in it. And there are people who know what that means. And if I drive down the freeways flipping people off, that does not show a good example of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe that this is a responsibility. Because you see, you don't know if you're the big book, if you're the only big book that somebody's reading. Sobriety is a responsibility. And I'm really grateful that I was told that. Polly, you may be the only big book James ever reads. Because you see, when I was 6.5 years sober, my youngest son called me on the phone, and he said he wanted what I had. And 6.5 years before, I was supposed to attend a function at his school. And he said, don't you dare show up at my school because I am ashamed of you. And 6.5 years later, he wants what I have. Last year, when James was 10 years sober, I had the privilege of giving him a cake at Monday night Seal Beach speakers meeting. And he got up behind the podium and he said, my mother was the big book I could not read. We make a difference. If you are a sober member in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, you make a difference. My son just celebrated in January 11 years of sobriety in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I am so grateful for that. My oldest son is not an alcoholic, and Russ has had a lot of problems, and Russ has been devastated by the disease of alcoholism. And you know, this program has given me so many gifts. And I've been able to sit down with my boys and validate their feelings and say,
you know, I am a child abuser, and what I did to you was not okay. And I've been able to sit there and listen to them. All the years they were growing up, I could never listen. And thanks to this program, I've been able to listen. And for that, I'm grateful. And I've been able to be all of the things I never, ever could be. Because you see, as a practicing alcoholic, I was an abusive mom. And this disease stripped away from my children their self-worth and their self-esteem. It took the thing that's most valuable. And I'm so grateful today that I have been able to be sober as long as I drank. And I have been able to walk this program one day at a time. And because of you, I have been able to be the mother I always wanted to be. My son is a person who suffered from depression, and I knew about that because I had had that too. And he began to try to take his life. And I thought that I would absolutely die because this child kept trying to hurt himself. But you know, when the student's ready, the teacher will appear. And I have a lot of blessings in this program, and one of them is I get to travel around and go places and carry the message of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I was 7 years ago, I was in Georgia. And my daughter-in-law called me on the phone, and she said that my son was in the hospital. He had put a pair of scissors in his stomach. And I had to speak the next morning, and I was devastated. And after I got through talking, this man walked up to me. And he said, "Young lady, you and I need to talk. We need to get into the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you need to know that God either is or he isn't. He is either all things or he's nothing. And what God does with his kids is none of your business." And with that man's help, I was able to release my son. And that was over 7 years ago, and Russ hasn't tried to hurt himself since. And for that, I'm so grateful. On May the 23rd, 1993, we had a gift given to our family that was beyond my greatest expectation. And his name is Ryan David Klinger Lee, and he's my grandson. And I'm here to tell you, he's my main man. 3 months ago, our family was presented with another challenge, but not near as big as the challenge that Ryan will have. And we found out that Ryan is profoundly deaf and that he will never hear. And our family was devastated because, you see, our perception was that there was something wrong with Ryan. But that was only our perception because, you see, he's God's child. And he's perfect in every way. And because of Ryan, he has opened up a world to our whole family that we didn't have a clue about. And what's happening is our whole family is learning to sign. And my son and daughter-in-law and Dave and I are over at Cypress College in the sign language class. And we're learning about a group of people we had no idea about. And you know, there's a lot of people who are deaf in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. And Ryan has opened up this whole world for us. And the gifts continue to come. And you see, the beauty of it is that James and Kelly are sober members of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they are wonderful parents. You have taught them how to be parents. And as my husband says about my son James, Dave says, "James is the finest man I know." And the reason that is because of a room of a program called Alcoholics Anonymous. The gifts are beyond my greatest expectation. If you'd have given me a list, told me to make a list of all the things I wanted in sobriety, I'd have never had the nerve to ask God to give me the things that he's given me. I'd have never had the nerve to ask God to give me a husband like Dave, friends like you. I'd have never had the nerve. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, "Left to my own devices, I'll self-destruct." The very best I could do for me was to get me pronounced dead on arrival. But thanks to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, you have breathed life into me. And tonight, I am the woman I always wanted to be. Tonight, I am enough. Thanks to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I am enough. I am self-supporting through my own contribution. When I got married, I grew up in Texas, and I truly believed that men were put on planet Earth to take care of women. That's what I believed. But for the past 2 years, I have been the primary breadwinner in my family. And I'm so grateful that you taught me how to go to work and taught me how to do that. I'm so grateful that I've had that opportunity. The place I always felt like such a failure was as a mom. And my sons have given me a gift, and my son said, "Mom, you are the mom we always wanted you to be." And tonight I have a gift for myself that has just come recently. And I believe with all my heart today that I would like to have me for a mom. And I didn't ever know how to do that until I came into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. The gifts are beyond my greatest expectation. When I was in Center Hospital, one of the counselors used to start every day with a prayer. And I like to end my AA talks with it because it's what this program means to me. I sought my God, I could not see. I sought my soul eluded me. I sought my brother, and I found all three. God bless.
That was wonderful. I have asked Troy to read a vision for you.
My name is Troy, and I'm a recovering alcoholic. A vision for you. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
I'd like to thank Manuel for reading chapter 3, Helen for reading chapter 5, Margaret for the 12 traditions. I especially want to thank our speaker, Polly P. from Cyprus. Thank you all for coming tonight. You are cordially invited to return next week when our meeting will be led by another sober alcoholic. And our speaker will be Keith C. from Pasadena. I'd like to thank Ron for letting me be of service tonight. And I'd like to ask Bill to lead us in our closing prayer.
This is recorded February the 7th, 1995 at Arbor Road Speakers Meeting.
This is a Caskey recording.
For copies of this and other tape, write P.O. Box 15818, Long Beach, California, 90815.